Hello and welcome to the latest Brewing podcast. This week it's back to emerging markets as we talk Trump, trade and China with M&G's Claudia Kalich. But before we get to that conversation, please listen first to our very important disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Research Director at Brewin Dolphin, and today we're going to be talking about emerging markets, and we're going to do it through the lens of the debt markets. We've got our preferred emerging market debt manager here with us today, Claudia Kalich of M&G. Claudia, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us. I think in terms of content and the roadmap for this conversation, I think we'd like to tackle the macro issues to begin with, whether it's the dollar, trade, what's happening with Chinese policy and stimulus, and then we'll look at how you're taking best advantage of the opportunities that you see out there. So, not an easy one to begin with, but let's start with the dollar. I guess what emerging market fund managers, debt or equity, would be most scared about would be a very strong dollar. How are you seeing the currency at the moment, and what sort of probability would you associate with that kind of outcome?
Yeah, major strengthening in the dollar is not my base case scenario for a few reasons. I mean, one is the tone of the Fed has markedly changed in recent months. So now the expectations will be for easing to start this year. If anything, one to two cuts is already priced into the curve and potentially additional cuts next year. Arguably, this does not indicate there will be a long cycle at all. So again, we're talking about a couple of cuts and this is pretty much it. However, this should not be benefiting the dollar in the sense that we're expecting a huge repricing in terms of interest rate differentials between U.S. and other currencies. In other words, I see the dollar as pretty much range-bound over the next 6 or so months, primarily because of the rate differentials. The other component, which we'll probably talk about later, is depending what happens with trade wars and other macro events. But from a pure interest rate perspective, where the U.S. is on the cycle versus other currencies, I would say the dollar is pretty much on the range.
I mean, M&G obviously cover all asset classes, but highly regarded for their fixed income expertise. And I mean, just on that sort of dollar point, I mean, like you say, the market's sort of anticipating, you know, maybe two to even three cuts this year. And, you know, because the market's anticipating that, if it doesn't get quite so many on the basis the US economy's in reasonable shape, then actually, even though if we only get one cut, even though it's a cut, that's less than the market's expecting, and that may be sort of a tailwind or a bullish component for the dollar. So, I mean, I'm wondering, in terms of what you're thinking, in terms of what your desk is thinking about that interest rate story, essentially asking, has the market sort of gone too far on what the Fed, what they think the Fed is going to do?
Yeah, I think we've seen clearly a very large repricing from expectations of hikes in the beginning of the year to now, as you pointed out, two or three cuts over the next various months. But I think we need to put it also in the context that if it is only one cut, I mean, what would the language also signal? I think given how, you know, the language has changed in recent months, now I find it hard to believe that there will be only one particular cut and signaling that this was it. They're only cutting once and pretty much on hold for a while. So I would expect if it is a cut, maybe the tone remains still relatively dovish in the sense that, you know, that could be still, they wouldn't close necessarily a possibility for additional cuts. And pretty much, I guess, depending on other data events, that would shape their decision. But no, I wouldn't think it would be a massive dollar bullish. Yes, to the extent that there's two or three rates cuts being priced, potentially we may see a small little, uptick in the dollar, small strengthening, but we're not talking about a huge dollar rally. I would say maybe a couple percentage points, which pretty much I'm relatively comfortable with. In other words, that's what I mentioned. We could be in a range, and by range, I mean probably a few percentage points of where we are at the moment. So I'm not expecting a huge dollar appreciation trend.
I mean, I guess we've sort of been here before, or we might get to a stage where, I mean, Jay Powell doesn't want to repeat past mistakes, does he, and say something like, you know, we're a long way from neutral. That didn't work out famously for him last year. So I would agree, even if we don't get the level of cuts that the market's anticipating, the Fed are going to be communicating a very sort of dovish tone. I mean, you touched on trade already, and again, it's a very difficult subject matter to know which way it's going to pan out, and news flow this morning hasn't been particularly encouraging. I mean, would emerging market assets sort of live or die on the progress of trade talks, i.e. if they continue to deteriorate, is that going to be extremely bad news for your asset class? And I don't know, is it too much of a difficult question to ask you how much you think that's the likely outcome?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of outcomes, very tough to say, given that the events, the language has changed from time to time. We have gone from periods of being, you know, highly concerned in the sense that there was a couple months ago huge expectations of the G20, and then the G20 came and went and was, you know, basically kicked the can and gave additional time for the talks to continue. But it is a very important event. My base case scenario for dollar in a range does not assume that we go to the absolutely nuclear option, which is additional tariffs on all Chinese goods and so forth, and retaliation potentially from China back to towards U.S. and so forth. So that's, I would say, it's a tail risk. It's not my base case scenario. If that were to be the case, then the dollar should outperform for the bad reasons. Namely, we would expect to see additional weakness in some of the currencies that are more directly impacted within this new scenario, particularly China, but also a lot of the OG currencies. But even some of the other currencies that may be more dependent on Chinese growth, commodity-related currencies such as South Africa rand and so forth, could also underperform in that scenario. Not my base case, but I wouldn't rule out that possibility, especially as the U.S. enters the election cycle. Some of the key points that are in dispute with the trade war are also politically, you know, important in the U.S., namely some of the industrial sectors and so forth, which would be politically, I guess, palatable from an election perspective. So I would not expect the noise to die down anytime soon before the next elections. But at the same time, I'm not sure at this point we go to the nuclear option, which is a huge full-blown trade war, because from that perspective, we would expect to see then additional dollar strength, which also would not be necessarily great for the U.S. economy in the near term, not to mention the response of equity markets and other financial assets.
I mean, I would certainly agree the markets would be pretty spooked by that type of outcome. But indeed, that sort of market reaction may force, you know, these leading decision makers back round the table. And we've sort of seen that Trump seems to sort of cool off on these things if the S&P takes a wobble. But I mean, one of the hopes or insurance that we might cling to is that Chinese policymakers may, you know, put their foot to the floor on stimulus if the trade tensions were to escalate. So notwithstanding the shorter term market volatility, do you see that as a sort of a, for medium long term investors, a sort of a get out of jail if the trade war escalates, even though it's not your base case, that could help investors out, a full throttle Chinese stimulus?
Yeah, in terms of the Chinese response, I would expect some stimulus measures, but if we were to compare how much stimulus they can give this time around versus what they did, let's say 10, 15 years ago, after the Lehman crisis, for example, it's more reduced, partly because there's much more leverage in the system now versus before. So that would constrain to some extent how much fiscal easing and how much additional debt creation they can engage on. Having said that, I think there is some scope for limited fiscal measures and additional easing of policies. They've done also on and off easing, such as in the real estate market and so forth. So basically macro potential measures. The other area where they can also stimulate at the margin is by monetary easing, either to reserve requirement cuts or base rate cuts as well. So that's also an option. But between those two measures, the fiscal and the monetary combined, I would say that could smooth the challenges faced by the trade war if it gets to a worst case scenario, but I don't think they can fully offset the potential growth impact, which depending on one's estimates and secondary effects, there could be easily a percentage point of GDP in terms of growth.
Okay, well, in danger of asking you to sort of talk about the same subject matter, we are seeing something of stimulus efforts from China based on some of the data that we're observing. You may counter that or agree, but we're not necessarily seeing the economic performance really tick up, although there has been some better data this week, we know in terms of industrial production and retail sales and things, fixed asset investment. But what sort of courage are you taking from Chinese stimulus efforts, and what sort of read are you getting on Chinese data and its contribution to emerging market growth?
Yeah, I mean, the contribution is still relatively large through, I would say, partly the indirect impact as well, which is credit confidence, basically, the impact on the perception in China on the spreads of a lot of the economies that may depend on China for commodities exports, such as mining and metals and so forth. There's also the impact of Chinese investments overseas, which we've seen a very large increase over the last few years in the China Belt Road and other types of initiatives, whether it is in neighboring countries in South Asia or Africa and so forth. So to the extent that that starts being reduced dramatically, then those countries would obviously suffer. I think the good news on emerging markets is also there is a lot of other countries which are part of our investment universe and we look at, they are much less subject to Chinese growth. So we have countries that may be commodity importers that actually may not be hurt at all. In other words, they may be more dependent on other drivers such as U.S. growth or their own domestic dynamics. You have countries such as India, which is also besides being a commodity importer, it's also a closed economy. So the closed economies will fare better in this environment where China slows. So I think there's ways to mitigate the China risk only precisely because having a very high confidence view on how the trade talks will pan out is not an easy task when you have so many geopolitical actors in the background designing those type of policy paths.
Okay, so if we were just to we'll move on to sort of how you're managing the emerging market asset class at the moment, but sort of a bit of a broad question, I know, but you know, clearly bond yields around the world are pretty light, pretty thin, if not negative. And, you know, just wondering what level of appeal emerging market debt sort of presents at the moment. Obviously, you're going to be picking out opportunities and adding value, no doubt, beyond benchmarks. But does the asset class sort of stack up as heroically cheap at the moment, or is it sort of fair? You know, where are you seeing it?
I mean, clearly we've seen a rally on emerging market spreads over the last few months, but if you put this into a broader context of what has happened on core rates in the UK, in the Eurozone, but also in the US, I would say that rally is not excessive. The amount of negative yielding or low yielding debt within the major industrialized nations is once again at all-time highs. So investors that are seeking for yield, you need to find alternatives, and one of them remains emerging markets. To the extent that these global conditions remain, in terms of monetary policy, remain very easy, that's quite beneficial for some of the countries that are more indebted. There's also other countries that own their own, for their own sake, they're being pursuing positive policies and reforms and so forth. So there's still quite a bit to choose from. Yes, valuations are not as cheap as what they were at the beginning of the year. But on the other hand, I think some of the the broader factors are supportive, particularly global rates again. So I think the asset class remains attractive in terms of growth.
So their sort of nominal value has deteriorated a little bit, but the relative value may indeed have improved.
Correct. Yeah. The magnitude of the rate rally in the developed markets, which was already coming from a very low base to begin with, is proportionally, it's much bigger than the rally we've seen on emerging markets. So basically, the ratio of emerging market yields versus developed market yields is it's actually a little bit better now than what we saw in the beginning of the year. And again, the broad framework, we still have the global economy, even if certain pockets are slowing a bit, like China and US may be at the last phase of the economic cycle. It's still broad-based growth. It's not the highest growth we've seen, but a point also to make is that emerging market debt doesn't need high levels of growth to perform well. In other words, we can still deliver, you know, acceptable returns within a slowing down environment, as long as it's not a massive recession, of course. If that were to be the case, then normally returns become negative, but that's not my base case scenario.
Okay, right, well, let's dig into where you're finding the best opportunities. I know you will find lots of less well-discussed parts of the market for this fund, and we'll get to that in a moment, but let's think about, I don't know, some of the major markets that dominate emerging market debt benchmarks. You know, I don't know if there's one of those that sort of stands out as a good opportunity for you in this fund.
Yeah, we have a couple of themes still in the fund. I mean, one of them is still overweight, select, you know, frontier markets, smaller countries that are actually benefiting now from this even lower rate environment. So certain countries in sub-Saharan Africa, for example, have been an overweight for a while and remain so. We're also finding opportunities in select emerging market currencies. And we're talking about the strengthening of the dollar earlier on. Some of the currencies I have in the portfolio are actually very lowly correlated with the dollar. In other words, the currencies such as the one in Ukraine or Nigeria, Kazakh, that pretty much move much more based on their own fundamentals as opposed to the broad dollar. So those are always good in terms of diversifying the portfolio, in terms of giving you different correlations. So we also find quite a bit of value in some of those currencies. Elsewhere, I'm finding value in pockets of the dollar bond market as well, particularly the long end. Some of the bonds in emerging markets, basically the spreads are quite steep. In other words, the yield on the long end bonds are much higher than what they have been in recent months because the shorter part of the curves have rallied quite a bit. So we're finding quite a bit of value as well in those longer dated bonds.
So longer dated dollar bonds in which regions?
It's a combination in that case. In some cases, Latin America, in some cases, CEMEA as well.
I mean, Mexico and Brazil are always two very interesting talking points. Obviously, you've got the Mexico-US standoff. Maybe that's looking a bit better at the moment, or indeed resolved for the time being. But is that an area of great appeal for you, Mexican assets?
Mexico, we're favoring local markets. We're also favoring some of the Pemex debt, which is the state-owned oil company. But overall, the direction of travel is still a little bit unclear. The finance minister was just replaced last week, so the signals that the incoming administration remains giving to the market are very mixed.
I mean, the new president, or relatively new president, has maybe unfairly, but has this sort of tarnished or painted as sort of quite an extreme sort of socialist. Is that right? Is that the case, and therefore may not be offering the most market-friendly policies?
I mean, he is, of course, left-winning. You know, on one hand, so far they've been very, very prudent on the fiscal side. In other words, even though he's left-leaning, he hasn't gone into a major populist spending spree, which actually has kept the fiscal deficit quite low. The issue will be, would this continue in the near term over the next few years with the replacement of the finance minister? Does he become then finally more populist now versus what they have been so far? That's one of the questions. And the other question is, again, with the oil company, Pemex, investors are hoping for faster reform and improvements on the company, which so far the various packages that have been announced have been underwhelming. Having said that, the bonds are trading quite cheap in our opinion, so we think there's quite a bit of bad news, basically reflecting the fact that there hasn't been any major announcements being given yet for Pemex. Overall, I would say it's not our favorite credit, but there are pockets of value within the local markets, the peso-denominated bonds, but also in Pemex that are attractive.
And on Brazil, a country I imagine you're pretty familiar with, we've got this much optimism about sort of pension reform. Is it off scale, do you think, to put Brazil's sort of fiscal budget back into balance over time, or has the market got overexcited or too excited by it?
No, the news have been actually quite positive in the sense that this bill has been passed at the committee stages. So there's various committees that it still needs to be voted on, including in the lower house and the Senate ultimately. But so far, the dilution of the bill has been modest. In other words, the biggest fear for the markets and myself was whether there would be huge amount of dilution in terms of the content of the bill that would make it basically a useless bill. So far, it has not happened. So if the bill continues being approved at the later stages with the same estimated amount of savings, which at the moment is 900 billion reais, that's quite positive for the market. So we need to see. I would imagine that it's still at risk of some small dilution, but hopefully it's not going to be material going forward, in which case then this is quite positive for the Brazilian assets. The savings have a very long-term impact in terms of reducing the fiscal deficit and associated debt. However, the signaling would be felt much more short-term. In other words, the confidence, which could improve the investment climate and so forth, would be a very short-term strong signal for the markets.
Okay, you mentioned Sub-Sahara Africa there, and there is a bit of a focus from investors about liquidity. Perhaps you could just sort of remind us of the investment case and where exactly you're investing, and then give us some words of comfort on liquidity.
Yeah, in terms of our overweight in Sub-Saharan Africa, we look at the countries, obviously from a very close perspective from a country-by-country basis. So in other words, some of the countries are improving, others are deteriorating. So it takes quite a bit of time to analyze them. But once you do, there are quite a few opportunities to invest. One of the major, benefits at the time being is that with core rates, as I mentioned earlier, being so low, that tends to benefit the more indebted countries, in which Sub-Saharan Africa tends to be a region where the debt levels are generally a little bit higher than the rest of the world. Within the complex, there's a few stories of countries that are undergoing reforms or where the growth momentum we believe is still sustainable, which means that debt ratios have remained quite stable for the last few years. Countries would include examples like Senegal, Rwanda, and Angola. So again, we look for places where the growth is sustainable, where the fiscal deficits are moderate, where the current account positions are also moderate in the size of the deficit, where that current account deficit might be funded mostly by foreign direct investment or more long-term factors. So within those three stories, they're quite interesting. In terms of portfolio strategy overall, there's a few other countries that we have. And given that they are relatively less correlated to each other, we also take comfort that liquidity has not been an issue. In other words, we size the positions, and to the extent that we have investments in about 10 or 12 countries within Sub-Saharan Africa, that gives us enough flexibility and liquidity to be able to not only buy the securities, but more importantly, to be able to sell when we think the prices no longer provide upside or if our investment thesis has changed.
Okay, well, many thanks, Claudia, for that really interesting update on the asset class and whether you're seeing the opportunities within emerging markets. To our listeners, we hope you enjoyed that. Please leave us feedback on Twitter referencing hashtag Bruin Podcast, leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud, or through whatever medium you listen to this podcast. But until next time, many thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.